Hey, I'm Stephanie.
And I'm Tara.
And you're listening to
Growing with Letty and Lucy.
I'm so obsessed with this thing. It's ridiculous.
Happy Earth Day.
Happy Earth Day. This is exciting. I mean,
it is. It's not Earth Day today, but it will be Earth Day when you're listening to this.
Yeah. Thursday the 22nd,
Earth Day. People of podcast land. Yeah.
That's very exciting. We have a couple of exciting things happening.
Mm-hmm.
We have Earth Day.
Brewing,
for sure. We have a phenomenal guest. Everybody is going to have to tune in two Thursdays for weeks. Sure. 2 weeks from this episode, because we have the best guest we've ever had, even though we've only had a few guests.
Sorry to our previous guests.
Sorry, other guests. No, yes, we've had great guests, yes, but this one ever is the cake topper.
This is literally the guest we've wanted
since forever. And we also have something to start thinking about for next week's episode. We'll make the official announcement, but I'll preview it by saying that Mother's Day is a big day for Tara and I, because that was our first, chance that we had to have our own farm stands. We both got them as Mother's Day gifts last year. So yep, it's our official 1 year anniversary as farm stand owners. And
I'm a little behind that, but yes.
Yeah, a little bit, but still it's like the sentiment behind.
Yes, the sentiment. The day.
So it's the first, yeah, because I don't even know when Mother's Day was last year. Pandemic land. But so we're going to announce next week a very, 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 very special event that we'll be doing for Mother's Day. So make sure that you tune in next week for that too.
So, I have an unrelated, just because I meant to say it last week, but before we get into the meat and potatoes, which is actually ironic because we're not talking about meat and potatoes at all today.
Nope.
Talking vegetables.
We're talking
about get this. We are a hydroponic gardening podcast. We're going to talk about vegetables today.
And meat, neither of which pertain to us.
But also, just because I meant to mention it not last week, especially for our new growers out there. And I remember to snap a picture when I was maintaining my farm stand today, Wednesday, when I should be doing it on the weekends. Mm. Don't say good girl.
Bad girl.
I have committed to doing it Saturdays and Sundays, but we had we had people over both days. We went sailing on Sunday. I've lived in San Diego since 1996. It's the first time I've ever been sailing.
That's amazing.
Literally have friends that belong to the yacht club and teach sailing, but I've never
gosh, that's amazing.
So it was really fun.
Did you have the best time?
It was really fun. Yeah. So I have put off, just got busy this week and did my farm stand today. But I thought about it last week when I did it, and I meant to mention it on the podcast and I didn't. So I'm mentioning it today, and remember to take a picture that I will post on Instagram the day that this goes live. But what's that like kind of meme people say, like, I don't know who needs to hear this, but girl, make sure your flat iron's off or something like that. So I don't know who needs to hear this, but girl, guy, start pruning your tomato plants from those suckers. You want your tomato plant to grow fast and thrive and start fruiting quickly. You got to get in there and you got to get the suckers.
I still need,
if you don't know what they look like. Yeah. So if you don't know what they are and my picture is not clear enough, Google it. It'll come up, tomato suckers. And basically all it is it's the elbow. I call it the elbow. Think of your elbow. It actually made me think about today because my son has a broken elbow and they put him in the range of motion brace yesterday. And I was like, okay, so when I was doing it today, I was like, oh, this is a good analogy. So if you take your arm and you bring and you hold it up and you bring your fist towards your shoulder and your elbow is bent, and then you open your elbow up right there in that opening where your elbow the inside of not your elbow, whatever the inside part, your elbow pit.
Your elbow pit.
On the tomato, on the tomato, your upper arm would be the main branch and the lower part of your arm would be the secondary branch that's coming off.
Okay.
And in that little elbow pit, well, a little tiny leaf / branch, if you will start to grow. It's not going to produce tomatoes. It's just going to suck the energy away from the root system. So you want to get in there. And the smaller your tomato plant is, the easier it is to get in there. So start doing it now.
Really?
Go up the main stem. And then as the tomato plant starts to have larger offshoot stems, those are all going to be now their own primary stem. So those will also have their own sucker. So as they start to go,
see
in those little elbows, and once you figure out what they are, you see them so easy and you just get in there. And you know what? It's also maintaining that and really just paying attention to it. It takes a couple of minutes while you're, letting your nutrient cycle, you can do it. I probably did mine in less than 5 minutes. I have I have 8 tomato plants between my large tomatoes and my cherries. So it took me less than 5 minutes to do all my plants, both weeks. There were a lot less last week and they started popping out this week, but they won't grow back in those areas. So,
Oh, that's interesting.
You'll only doing your outer branch
for good.
So just keep an eye on that. It's also
I was gonna say it's really interesting because I my tomatoes are so tiny. They're so tiny, but they're like the plant. So I've got some flowers happening, but the plant themselves are like itty bitty. And and I didn't know if
doing
something wrong. The weather's been great except for today, which is like, well, I like it. It's cool. It's nice and overcast today.
We got what I call our San Francisco weather.
Exactly.
For the rest of the week.
That's exactly what it's like. It's like a perfect day in the Bay. And
it's when all my succulents start really doing well.
Yeah, and it's supposed to be cooler in the next week. Cool, or by cold I mean like, in the 60s and 70s, and then lows are like in the 50s. So it's not bad at all. It's really mild.
Yeah. Cause I don't know. Mine are doing pretty good. The cherries aren't huge, but they're pretty like healthy and bushy and they have a decent amount of flowers popping up. I have flowers coming out, a lot of flowers on my zucchini plants. So let's see how it works. I mean, they're not flowered yet, but they're, you can see on like tons of little buds at the base.
Yeah. I've got that too. I think the wind the other day helped too, because, it was really windy. And while some of my plants did not fare well, my zucchinis seemed to like just grow in leaps and bounds after the wind. And which is weird too, because I don't have any flowers yet. So it couldn't have been pollination, but it still feels like it.
Maybe it's like, was it Natalie that was saying that it can like strengthen the like roots?
Yeah. So I've actually been going up to each plant and shaking them, partially to kill off some of the bugs or at least shake them off, but also to try to see if that helps strengthen the root systems at all. But you know what else is really tiny? And I really would love to hear from some listeners on this one. And also you, I think I have alpine berries, not strawberries. I've never had an alpine berry before, but I have more strawberries than I've ever had luck with on my farm stand before. However, they're about a centimeter big, fully red, and then they start shriveling. They don't even taste like a strawberry. They're like very tart and teeny tiny. So I'm not sure what's up with that.
That doesn't sound right. And you're cutting off your runners.
No, I have no idea what to do with that. I know that you and I run, like, we have this whole hydroponic gardening show that we do every week, but I'm still
don't
like,
mistake us for experts. Please. We're just talking it through. Like, let's be real clear. If you haven't figured it out yet, listening to this podcast, we started it because these are the conversations we were having on the phone. We figured we may as well record them. But that does not make us any sort of expert. We are trying for you. So
I keep seeing people say that you put a root riot or a grow medium around the stem of a strawberry runner, and then you wait for roots to come through the grow medium, and then you clip it off. What?
Oh, that's ridiculous. Forget it. Let's just listen. This is year two, but we're going to treat it as year one right now. Let's just get the farm stand part done. Let's not try to reinvent the wheel here. Just cut those damn runners off. Let's see if we can get the strawberries to grow first. And then we can deal with the runners later. For now.
Can you clip the runner and then put it in water and let the root grow? Like you could an avocado seed?
You could put it in soil. Technically, you should be able to just put it in soil. I've heard of people putting it in their like compost bins and then finding like strawberry plants growing in their compost bins. So they clearly are like pretty easy. I mean, you know what the runner is for, right? If it's in a garden bed. So what I would do is I would clip them off and just toss them in one of your garden beds and not even think again. If you get extra strawberries, great. Cool. That's what a runner is for in a garden bed or in a farm situation. The strawberry shoots off these runners. The runner will sit on top of the soil and then grow. Like it's not supposed to be like cultivated. Like it's making its own, it does its own thing. So if you want to maybe get something, I wouldn't stress about it, but I just toss them in your garden beds and they might just take off. You never know. But what it should do is give it, again, it's the same idea as a sucker. It's sucking all the energy away from the main plant.
Right.
So you should, I'm not saying it is, again.
Right.
I'm no expert, but I do think that it could be the issue. Is your plant is and I didn't get a lot of strawberries last year, and that's
me neither.
Definitely something I wasn't doing.
Yeah. Well, last year my strawberry plants never grew beyond like maybe 4 inches. Well, no, that's not true. One of my strawberry plants grew a little bit, and I got, I think, 2 or 3 strawberries off of it. So I was like, these aren't viable for me. But now I have like, I don't know, like 50 teeny tiny strawberries on this little plant.
Let's go back two things really quick. First of all, the suckers on this tomato, checking for those is a really great opportunity for you to discover that you have tomato
worms.
Other critters, because you're right up in there. So that's also another thing. Anyway, so if you don't know what a runner is, like the suckers, if you don't know, and my glorious audio transcription of it doesn't make it through your brain, Google it. Strawberry runners, it's very simple, but for the most part it's pretty easy. They're super long, almost stringy branches off of your strawberries with no leaves, and again, using my elbow analogy, it looks almost like the little branch has a little elbow, and on the outside part of the actual elbow, if you look close, it almost looks like it's trying to grow a strawberry. Like it looks like spotted, almost like it would have like little seeds in it, but it doesn't. Huh. But it resembles, like, it looks like if you were going to grow. It reminds me of when they try to grow like a ear on the back of a mouse or something. It looks like they took an elbow and they tried to grow a little strawberry on it.
So does it have a flower on the end? And you said it has no leaves?
I don't think it has flower. No, it's just like a long stringy piece that has this like little elbow, this little knobby elbow. That's the thing that will like sit down on the soil and grow roots into it. Once again, lots of hand motions that you'll never see, but Stephanie knows what I'm talking about.
Totally. My friend Chandra in Ohio, she is like, I'm going to look up her Instagram name because everybody should be following her. She is brilliant in the garden, but like in a dirt garden. Chandra Frederick, oh, lovely day on Instagram. She is like the DIY master and like the home sanctuary creator. She's been here in LA. We actually lived in the same neighborhood, never knew each other online, or never knew each other in person until she moved to Ohio.
And then isn't that funny?
Instagram friends. But anyway, she just built a garden bed just for her strawberries because her strawberries were overtaking everything in her garden. And yeah, I was like,
that's how, because of the runners.
Yeah. So it's impossible for me to grow a freaking strawberry, but Chandra's like, yeah, oh, I'll put them in, you know, half of my garden bed. And then they take over everything.
If you want to like
plant them. She's amazing.
Just shove them in some soil in a terracotta pot next to your farm stand and see what happens.
It's not that.
But the whole root riot and like waiting and
clipping them to the base. And I was just like, wait, what's happening? I'm so confused right now. I don't know what to do with myself.
Sometimes we make things too complicated. I mean, if that's something awesome, but like, let's figure out first if the strawberries on the lettuce are going to grow to edible size.
And this whole farm stand business is all about novice gardening anyway, and you can get more complicated with it. But I think that there's a lot, like, because the Facebook group is growing so big so quickly, I think a lot of people probably don't understand that you don't have to do all the things that all of the expert gardeners do in your farm stand. Like, you don't have to put a root riot on your strawberry, you know, runners so that you can grow new strawberries. You can just clip them. I think that's a really important thing to know.
Like, and God bless Mariah, but you also don't have to spray your stand with worm juice.
Oh yeah, you definitely don't. I have not yet. In fact, I need to spray it with something because the, oh my God, the bugs episode is happening in my house right now. Not in my house, outside my house. I've got so many bugs.
I still don't have any bugs.
I'm so mad about it because the minute the weather warmed up.
I have anxiety about it though.
I
have major anxiety pulling off those suckers today. Because you can smell my tomatoes. You know what I'm talking about, right? The tomato smell of just the leaves, but also, you know what else smells like that is those damn tomato worms when you smush them.
Ew.
So I keep having all this anxiety that I'm going to today I pulled one off. You just pinched it off. And I like another leaf, like hit my hand and I like jumped like, oh my God, is that a worm? But there's no worms there. But also, I keep looking for bugs. Oh, I will say I have had a few spiders like that I've rinsed out of my salads recently. Uh-huh. And I did discover some little spider. I didn't see any spiders, but I definitely saw some like webbiness today when I was cutting off my wasabi arugula. Because I've had it for so long, it just keeps producing and I just keep cutting and keeps producing. So I'm just going to leave it there, but it's getting very matted toward the bottom. Uh-huh. And I think like some of the older
the roots.
Yeah, no, but some of the older herbs do that too, where you're clipping them and then the old stuff is there. It starts to get very congested in there, almost like a really bad tangle in your hair.
Yeah.
And the reason I finally got rid of my mint is it was like that. And I know you said that your mint got very spider infested.
Yeah.
And I am thinking that might be like, we might want to get rid of our plants when they get too like at the base, a lot of dried out dead plant material is like in there. It's like the perfect spot for like a gross spider. Bugs.
Yeah.
Mostly
I need to
spiders,
get some ladybugs too. Hey, so today we're actually, we need to transition here into what we're talking about today.
Yes.
Which is
Earth Day,
but not just Earth Day. We're really talking about Lettuce Grow's mission in regards to Earth Day and the way that I've heard a lot of people, actually one of my really close friends was like, yeah, but you're still like, you're growing your own stuff in your farm stand. She's a very good dirt gardener, but she was like, you're growing all this stuff in your farm stand, but there's still a ton of emissions and whatever that's coming from what you're doing because you're, you know, she basically downplayed it. And she was like, it's not really as, you know, earth friendly as you think it is. And I was kind of like taken back by that because one, she knows I have a terrible time with dirt gardens. And except for my green garlic, which I seem to be doing fine with, but it's also a 9-month process, I've heard. So I'm wondering what she's basing that on. I think it's lack of information. And okay. I think it's because she's so good at just like dirt. And one day she was like, oh, these are the potatoes. She lives in a condo and she has a patio. And she was able to grow potatoes in her patio. And I'm like, I can't grow potatoes in my backyard and you can grow them on your patio. Like, how is this fair? But she's just a green thumb person, knows everything about every kind of plant. She loves plants, but she was a little bit dismissive. Where's she getting her soil from? She's using organic soil from somewhere. I don't know.
Right. That's shipped to her.
Probably.
And how much water does she use?
I don't know that.
And she's in California.
Yeah. She's in California.
So water is always a commodity in California.
She said that when she has an aero garden now because somebody gifted it to her. So she has a little aero garden. She grows basil and like tender herbs on her in her kitchen. But she said that she doesn't know if she'll ever be able to not have tender herbs. And I was like, that's the thing with the farm stand. Like having fresh herbs in your house at your disposal where you don't have any waste and you don't have any packaging, you don't have to worry about it. You don't have to pay $2 every time you go to the store to buy organic scallions or whatever. You know, that's the value for me in this, for my budget.
Also, like, so we have the pizza oven, obviously. Yeah. We had people over to make pizzas the other night and I bought a big thing of basil because my basil isn't, I got rid of my old one and I have two in there, but it's, I mean, I could pick it off. That's another issue I'd like to talk about, but I could pick a few leaves off, but definitely not enough to like
feed people,
serve a group of people to put on their pizza. But I didn't use all of it. Mm-hmm. And now it's either like it's in my fridge and I either have to think about using it or whatever, or it's going to rot and it's in a plastic container. But like on the farm stand, if I need a handful of basil, I can get a handful of basil and there's still a lot left and it's still not going to die.
Right.
It's not going to die in my fridge until I'm ready for it.
Yeah.
So that's another big issue.
She also said though, that she noticed, she's like, you're using energy for the timer and the, you know, the water system and all that. And she's like, your electric bills are going to, I was like, no, my electric bills have not, it's like a turtle tank. We have a turtle tank that has a filter running 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, unless she breaks it and I turn it off and ignore her for a minute. But we have that already. There hasn't been any increase in our utilities from the lettuce grow.
I think the filter is like one size up from the filter I use for we have a water fountain for our animals.
Okay.
Oh, because that's cool. My cat has urinary tract issues. And so that will attract cats to drink water is the running water and it being nice and clean. So, it's like a teeny, like that is such a, and actually it's
such a low amount of energy. And to be honest, the energy production is way smaller than the water usage because energy will keep being produced. You know what I mean? Like there's other alternate sources for energy and solar powering and all that kind of stuff. And water was very, we don't have a lot of it in California. So that's an interesting thing, but that said, there's a brand new piece of information that Lettuce Grow they just distributed.
Oh yeah. In conjunction with the farm project, right? Is this what you're talking about?
Yeah. Go for it. I'm trying to find it right now. There we go.
So I don't have the first page. I printed it out, but I don't have the first page. So it's actually called something.
It's called the American Food Journey Report.
Yeah.
A pulse on how much we know about the food system and what we eat. And it is fascinating. You guys should definitely look it up. It's on the Lettuce Grow website, I believe.
And they're sharing it on Instagram today, which is yesterday, if you're listening to this on Thursday, but on Wednesday, they posted it on Instagram. along with a little quiz, which was interesting. And I wanted to, Stephanie hasn't taken it yet. So I wanted to kind of like walk through that with her.
Yeah. Quiz me.
So, but basically the where this came from is Let Us Grow and the Farm Project, which is a nonprofit organization, decided to do a survey of 1,500 Americans about their knowledge on
1,500 over 18. So actual adult Americans
on
not children,
right? Knowledge of nutritional environmental effects of the U.S. food system. And oh my gosh, do I not preach this all the time about, I mean, this is kind of more involved. What I say is that Americans are so far removed from their food source and how for food production. And it's truly alarming. I know we hear a lot about cows. And I think we touched on that with Robbie.
Yeah. Definitely.
Is that meat agriculture, dairy agriculture in this all over the world is one of the biggest contributors to global warming. The food industry specifically in this country is and all over the world is a huge contributor. And obviously we can't get rid of food. Even if we got everyone to be a vegan, we can't get rid of food.
No. Yeah, exactly. You know,
like, and especially so even
things growing from the ground, that's when it's the most important.
So yeah. So this was, it's really important that we understand how we play a part in it. And so let's just go through this quick little quiz real quick.
Okay. Quiz me.
Okay.
I have not, by the way, I've read the report, but I have not memorized it. And I also have not checked it on Instagram yet on purpose per a conversation Tara and I had earlier today. So go ahead. I'm not cheating.
So this is both our specific part in it and at the industry as a whole, right? How much food does the average person waste in a year in terms of pounds? 50, 100, 200, or 300?
Per person?
Per person, the average. 300 pounds.
Ugh.
300 pounds. And that's due to spoiling or over preparing.
Maybe I should say
500. The things that we throw out either before we cook them or after we cook them. And I will say in my house, we are guilty of both. We're a lot less guilty of it since getting the farm stand because
we do too. So let's think about that for a second. So 300 pounds per person, that's a very large number when you multiply it times the number of people in your home,
right?
So that is 1200 pounds of wasted food for my family.
Yes. And I did this with my husband earlier, and he said that we are above average. we trend above average. One way that I have, so pre-prepared, I have, cut that a lot with the farm stand. So I will say I noticed a huge uptick in our waste in that last few months where I just was not capable of of doing anything with my farm stand, and so I wasn't producing a lot and I wasn't eating off of it. So I you know, because best of intentions, especially in January when the shit hit the fan in January, I'm also trying to like be January Tara, you know. Like, let's eat lots of vegetables, and then I would buy them and we'd end up like eating out or ordering in, not eating out. But, so that part, the second part is I have always been guilty. Well, my husband especially over prepares because, he's Italian and there always has to be extra food for everyone. I have my part of the over preparing has reduced a little bit as my son has gotten older. I will say, it's harder to cook for three people, especially with one of them being little.
Yeah, totally.
Or two people when my husband was gone a lot. But now that we've consistently been three and Brayden eats like an adult and a half now, it's easier to cook for the three of us. But I do now, because I'm home during the day, I do cook myself lunch. That's hard to do for one person without wasting stuff. I have notoriously been awful about eating leftovers, but I have put a lot more thought into it recently. And so I try to prepare things knowing that I will eat the leftovers, or I make a concerted effort to eat the leftovers, even if I'm not like thrilled with doing that. Mm-hmm. I do it. That helps with the spoiling.
Yeah. I think I told you about this maybe in a different episode, maybe not, but I used to be like the, I would just feel so guilty over how much waste I would throw away. Like, oh, that lettuce was in the back of the fridge and I didn't know. And there's a stink in my fridge and oh my gosh, it's rotten arugula. Well, I don't ever have to worry about that again, because the only time I purchase arugula is when I'm making a very large arugula salad for company, and we haven't had company in a year. So, you know, I'm just using the arugula off my stand. But I just, like, I used to be so guilty of that. And I also, I had, you know, I grew up with six brothers and sisters, and then we adopted somebody, and then my best friend lived with us. And like, we had, you know, 10 to 11 people in our house at all times. So, and I was one of the primary cooks. So like, we always overprepared because there was always a need. There was always a mouth that needed to be, you know, filled.
Right.
So, it was really hard for me. I know that I have not lived at my family home, in, it's embarrassing how many years, in like 28 years, but at the same time, it took me until I was a full grown up with kids to like learn how to cook for a smaller number of people.
Right.
So anyway, but now, so I would make leftovers and I'd put them in the fridge, and then my husband would go to work, and then he would spend $25 on lunch at, you know, in Century City, and, or in downtown LA or whatever. And, you know, we, or I was guilty of it too. I just only have not been working for the past 9 months. Like, I've worked consistently since I was a child before that. So we would go to work, we would not bring our leftovers, and then we would throw them out. And now, since quarantine, he actually is very content if I cook for not four people, but five, and then pack up one healthy meal for lunch for him for the next day. So he has whatever I made for dinner for leftover lunch the following day. And then that way I can make the kids sandwiches and I can eat whatever I want. But, you know, that's been a huge thing, but we never would have gotten there without the coronavirus and quarantine.
Oh yeah. It definitely reset a lot of stuff.
He really did. Okay, go to the next question. What's the next? Okay. So we already know my family's horrible.
Just wanted a moment. Just 1 second. One thing that you, we have to think about this, and so I'm sure I'm not even thinking of all of it, but not only the amount of food that goes into a landfill, but all of that food also traveled to you somehow.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So that is an additional impact. Okay, so how much money does the average family of four waste a year on unused food? $200, $800, $1,500.
I'm going to say $2,500. Oh, so average, you're including everybody from all over the place and not Los Angeles prices?
Yeah.
I'm still going to say $2,500 because I feel like that's
It's $1,800. So, okay. I mean, let's pretend that you don't care about the environment. And I think that probably most people that are listening to our podcast or are lettuce growing probably do care about the environment. But set aside that, that's $1,800 a year. It's a lot of money to be wasting on food. I mean, that is, you know, that's 2 months of groceries for some families in this country.
Yeah.
You know,
that's not only that, that's like, for some people, I would say it's even more than that, you know?
Yeah.
But I would say I'm super guilty of that. I mean, there's times literally, again, back in the day when I would open the fridge and literally take out a thing of tomatoes I didn't know was there and lettuce that I didn't know was there. And my refrigerator's not the easiest to see everything that exists inside of it. Mm-hmm. And I would take things out and be like, there's $4. Just count the dollars as I threw things away when I would clean the fridge. And that's awful. awful, awful, awful. And again, that food traveled somewhere. It went to a grocery store. How many hands touched it? And then it sat in my fridge after being trucked all over the country or internationally or whatever, if it's grown from Mexico. And then it just sat and died. And that was $4 I spent to throw in the trash where it's going to get trucked into a landfill.
Yeah.
Which is awful. So, it's embarrassing.
The next is how, on average, how much of the American diet consists of processed foods? 10, 30, 60, or 90%?
I'm going to say 60. On average, it's either 60 or 90.
It's 60%, which is a huge number. And like, let's stop and talk about what that means. I'm just going to define it for myself. So I think that there's a bunch of different definitions. Yep. But for me, a processed food is something that you eat that is a complete food that you eat that you didn't prepare yourself, essentially. Mm-hmm. Comes in a box, a can, a bag, is usually has a longer shelf life, right? Mm-hmm. That has more than 5 ingredients. So I'm a little bit more free on this. So mm-hmm. I do buy things, bags of frozen vegetables and grains from Trader Joe's or from Whole Foods that have sauces in them, but I look to see mm-hmm. that they have less than 5 ingredients, and they're all things that I can pronounce. And
yeah, that's important.
Are naturally sourced. So nothing that has like a chemical name or any sort of preservative. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying I eat like that. Like I'm not trying to say that. We are guilty of eating processed foods. And but I would say, like we say, what is it? Better is better. And there are things, and actually I was going to share with you this offline, like I have this can that I got from Trader Joe's just to try it, of chickpeas. Have you had these? The canned chickpeas, and they're in like cumin and lemon.
Oh no, I haven't seen that.
There's maybe like 6 ingredients, but they're all, I mean, the only thing that's in there that's not like an actual whole food is like citric acid.
Okay.
And they're in a can. I put them in, I grabbed a bunch of arugula and cutting celery and stuff off my stand today. Did some soft boiled eggs and some brown rice and tossed it all together with just this can. It's in its own dressing and it's delicious. These are the kind of things that, I mean, purists would probably say that's a processed food.
Yeah.
I would consider it a whole food. And I think that there has to be some, it's a pre-prepared whole food. There has to be some room for the fact, because the problem is that if we go back in time and we say, we used to cook our food, we used to make all our own bread. Also, women weren't allowed to work outside the home. And so,
or vote.
Right. So when we, and the part of the, of, I mean, this is real criticism. I'm not trying to like, it's not a criticism. It's just fact that mm-hmm. the processed food industry picked up steam when women started joining the workforce.
Absolutely. Yep.
And that's because if we want to get back to fully whole foods, guess who it always ends up following on? Not always, but for the most part, it becomes
the 90% issue. Of the time.
So now you have women working outside the home and demanding jobs and coming home and feeling the pressure that they have to make their own sourdough. And like, that's insane. Yep. You can buy a loaf of sourdough that's not full of junk.
Yeah.
You know? So I think
that's so true.
Like room to like, there's some intricacies there where we,
that's such a trigger point for me.
Yeah.
Because like when I started my family, I was working in West Hollywood, the Pacific Design Center, and lived 5 minutes away on Harper. So it was like a 5 minute commute to work, a 5 minute commute home, whatever. And I was in LA, like I had 10,000 miles on my car after 2 years of working full-time and having a kid too, you know? Right. And I would go to work in the morning, come home at lunch, nurse my baby, put my food all together in a crock pot, go back to my office, come back home, nurse my baby, pump twice while I was at the office. Also, come home and dinner would be ready. And it was like, we ate a lot of smushy food. That was before the Instant Pot. That was before, you know, that was just like a regular crock pot that you can only handle so much crock pot food before you just burn the F out. Cause it's like,
crock pot limit is 0. I don't like crock pot food. I'm just not a crock pot girl.
It was just, there's so much.
Again, I don't work outside of the home. I probably would do that. I mean, I hate to I definitely think all of these things are important, and we should also be working towards that as a goal.
Yeah.
But there are some things that are there's other things that I think, that's why I say so much feeds into the environment, right?
Absolutely. Totally.
Help with universal childcare and things that help with the environment. Because when we have more time and less stress to freaking figure these things out, my sister was like, is it horrible that I'm feeding my family completely out of the microwave right now? And I'm like, no, is your family fed?
Because right, that is true.
You're in a special circumstance right now. You're in an extra stressful environment. And also I don't want to get off on a tangent, but anyone wants to look at, there is a recent Harvard study that came out about microwaves and about how they're actually fantastic and nutritious way to cook your food if they're done right. So if anyone wants to
that,
because I know it's very, very controversial.
Really?
But,
my mom always said that microwaving food reverses the chemistry of the food. And so it actually works opposite in your body. Then if everything goes in a, clockwise circle, microwaving it somehow turns it counterclockwise and then it messes
you up. This was an independent, not sponsored by any sort of industry, Harvard Medical Review study that was published recently. Okay, so processed foods are an environmental issue for many reasons. And some of the ones that are big are extra packaging. So whether that be boxes, plastic, cans, whatever the case might be, extra added weight because of all that packaging and also the central nature of the processed foods, where they're coming from and how far they're going and traveling and being shipped. The way in which they're produced using tons of water and chemicals, even if they don't have chemicals in the actual food, they could be putting chemicals into the system just by whatever mode of production they're using. And on top of that, I know we're focusing on the earth, but processed foods I'm not going to say all, but majority are just simply not good for us.
Yeah, absolutely.
They have high amounts of preservatives, high amounts of sodium, high amounts of the sugar, carbs. They're produced, and this goes to our food production, right? We subsidize certain things. We subsidize corn, we subsidize soy. Mm-hmm. So what that means is those things are incredibly cheap to grow, which means we look for all sorts of non-natural ways to use those in our foods. That's the problem with corn syrup, is that our food is so full of soy and corn products because it's so cheap, and our bodies were not meant to eat those things in that amount of quantity. On a personal level, my son, I know I have referred to he has a chronic medical condition that he was diagnosed with in January. He's been put on medication that he will probably most likely be on for the rest of his life. There's several different options for medications for his condition. And the one he's on now is the best, the one you hope works, basically.
Yeah.
Because it has the least amount of long-term side effects. And so we want to keep him on that. However, he started having headaches. Very frequent headaches. They've been bad, mild to bad, mostly for the last month.
But then on Monday, it was real bad.
Became crippling on Sunday night, couldn't sleep, which is very important for his health, is his sleep and his schedule. And then Monday couldn't get out of bed, if he moved. So I've never had a migraine, but I love a lot of people that suffer from migraines. And what would assume was a migraine-like episode. And I did some digging, and it is a common side effect of his medication now. And he's been having some other side effects as well, but I really am hesitant to switch him off, right? Because the other ones have longer term, damage to your liver, damage to your bones, all of these different things. So this is the one I really would like him to stay on if it's working for him, for his main condition. So I started doing some research and then talked to the doctor and the specialist, and really a lot of what it comes down to is, very common thing for headaches is hydration. Mm-hmm. He is pretty good about staying hydrated most of the time, but we were out sailing on Sunday and he was in sun and we were drinking sodas and, you know, things like that, mm-hmm. That are not, you know, a normal part of our day, but we had, you know, ordered sandwiches and we had some chips and things like that. And, you know, easy things, like we weren't going to be on the sailboat preparing food. And, apparently that's a huge trigger. So
jeez,
that, and because he has so many other restrictions right now, on his lifestyle, that we have to enforce, he's a teenager. So I just haven't been as strict as I've been in the past about what comes into the house and what he eats, because it's just like one more thing that I'm having to, like, you know, force on him. But now apparently that will also be, which is good in the long term, it's good. Yeah. And we just are going to have to get it under control. But that's another thing to think about, is all of these, you don't know what's in them and you don't know what it's doing to your body. Even if your body's not, you're not getting something like a headache, you might feel lethargic or whatever the case might be. It's just, they're not good for us. They're not.
No.
And going from there as well, I have a recommendation. Many of you may have already heard of the book Salt, Sugar, Fat by Michael Moss.
Yeah,
it really is about the way in which, so the full title of the book, How Salt, Sugar, Fat, How the Food Giants Hooked Us. And it's basically how they use food science and chemicals to get us not only eating, but craving these foods.
Crazy.
They make it so, I mean, just one little tiny piece of it is they make it so that the flavor doesn't last long.
Really?
So that you can grab, what's the chip that they say, but you can't eat just one? Yeah.
Ruffles, that's Beverages, a good bet,
because Lays. they literally designed it so you can't eat just one.
Bet you can't just eat one. What was that? Hey. They're like, is it Ruffles or it's like, I feel like it's sour cream and onion something or other, or barbecue Lays or something like that.
I mean, it's really just basically all that's the whole, the entire, right, right.
Yeah.
So he has a new book out called Hooked. Let me see.
Ooh, what I need that to one add that is. One and too.
It basically is the follow-up, and it's basically how, let's see, before, okay, Hooked, Food, Free Will, and How the Food Giants Exploit Our Addictions. So it's basically, he took that idea of being addicted to these processed foods and he went deeper to see like how it works in our brain, why it's so hard for people to lose weight and stop eating processed foods. It's so interesting. And it ties into all of this stuff, right? With our food source. So those are two things. And if you aren't a reader or it's too much to read, he was on the Armchair Expert Dax Shepherd podcast this week, Michael Moss, on, I believe it was on the 15th.
Okay.
So it was a great episode to listen to. So that's that. And going back, that might have been the last, let me see, percentage of, What percentage of perfectly good food is thrown out due to a misunderstanding of sell-by labels?
Ooh.
30, 60, 40%, or 80% of food is perfectly good food is thrown out.
I'm going to say 80%.
80%.
Is it right? 80%?
Yes. And that is a whole issue, I think, in this country. There's some... I've read some things about some companies actually purposely doing that for various reasons, one of which liability.
Oh, you mean predating them? Like saying something expires before it does?
Right. And and also
I've had the opposite.
And I don't know that I'm not gonna say anything specific. I don't know anything specific, but I don't know if this is true or not, or if there's any sort of like they've ever found this specifically, but there is was some talk about even just so that you have to buy the product again. And this is not saying expire. And this is why they're saying it's the misunderstanding buy. Of or this is a sell by label, right? So people will throw it away because they think, but no, that's when the store has to get rid of it.
Right.
And it's not even bad at that point. That's what a lot of stores now, like Trader Joe's.
Trader Joe's is, I was just going to talk about that.
They give their sell by stuff that's expired sell by. They give those to like food banks or community kitchens.
Yeah. Well, okay. So they do a couple different things on that, but, so a couple things, there's a couple dates that are important. There's expires on or expires by, or just expires 4/12, whatever. There's sell by and there's best buy. Sell by means that the store needs to sell it, have it off of their shelves so that they can have more shipment coming in. Best buy means that it's probably okay afterwards, but it's going to be at its peak before that point. And then there's the expires, which means it'll actually rot, which is really reserved for like meats and dairy and stuff like that. So that's really interesting because the dates mess with people. You see it and you're like, I don't want to touch that. I don't want to get salmonella. Well, you're not going to get salmonella from rotten lettuce if the lettuce doesn't have salmonella.
Even expires by, I see it on the Trader Joe's like mom group things all the time. Like, oh, people are so scared of food. So scared.
They really are.
And they'll say, oh, this says best buy. That's the worst. But even expires by, and it was yesterday. Do you think it's okay? Let me tell you, people, look at your food.
Yeah.
Smell your food.
Open your eyes. So yes, that is true. And here's what I was going to say about Trader Joe's. You have to have a little intuition as to what you're doing, right? Because that, like you were just saying, if you don't open your eyes and look at your food and evaluate it objectively, then you're going to waste money and you're going to waste resources and you're going to contribute to the environmental mess that we're in. Stores like Trader Joe's will take that sell by food. And in our Trader Joe's in Los Angeles, anyway, all of the food, all of the produce is on the shelf for 4 days. That's it. Every single thing has to be turned over within 4 days. And you know where all of it goes? Boys' homes.
That's good.
So they're taking the food that was not, sorry if you can hear my dog howling. Jeez. They take all of the food that is more than 4 days on the shelf and they send it to the local homes for orphan children or, you know, troubled children or whatever. So at least they're getting fresh food still. It's not 4 days after you buy a tomato. It's not rotten. It's just that they have a principle that they follow that makes them a responsible party. And I really, you know, it's like another reason to throw my money at them because one of the worst things you can see is a grocery store's trash dump at the end of the day.
We've also made it regulatory wise and cost wise. It costs companies a lot more to do something with that food than it does to trash it. So we've made it incentivized, right?
Yeah,
remember, I always say gross. What we will incentivize people based on cost and ease. And that's what we have done.
Yep. Absolutely.
Processed foods are incredibly cheap.
Yep.
Right. Same as fast food is incredibly cheap and it's easy. And those are the things that we've incentivized people in, like are by subsidizing food, like corn and soy and all of that. So anyway, don't get me started on that. I'll just go down a rabbit hole on that one. But
okay. Next question.
Next question. On average, how far does your lettuce travel before reaching the grocery store? 12 miles. 150 miles or 3,000 miles?
I'm going to say 3,000 because the options are so varied there, but also because I know a lot of our produce comes from Mexico and I know that, at least in Los Angeles, and I know that If it's coming from Mexico, it's a lot more than 40 miles away, because that would just get you to Orange County. Sorry, no, that's not right. So
it's
yeah,
1200.
Oh, was that an option?
So on, yeah.
Oh, I missed it.
So okay, 1200 on average, and obviously some places are better than others.
Yeah,
you know, like we are probably getting, things are getting closer to me in San Diego from Mexico, but also like in California in general, we probably are closer to our lettuce, because yeah, that's where a good majority of lettuces in the United States are grown, in the Central Valley. So we are a little bit closer. I know they talk about in this report. So there's a whole section in the report that's interesting called attitude versus actions. So attitude, 80% of respondents feel it is important that their fruits and vegetables are grown locally, but 60% admit they don't know where the produce from their local grocery store is grown. And only 1 in 10 proactively shop local by frequenting farmers markets. Now, I will say my beef with farmers markets are, first of all, they're incredibly
beef.
My beef with them is, and I love farmers markets, don't get me wrong.
Sure, me too.
My mom was like the OG farmers market lady. But they're most often in well-to-do areas. You know, not the food deserts that need them. And also, what constitutes local? Because I go to my farmer's market here in San Diego, and the farmers are coming, which is no harm with them. They're coming from Northern California, Central, like Central Coast, Northern California, Central Valley. And they're driving to how many farmer's markets a week? And they're just driving their own little trucks. They're not driving a huge thing. But that's
still
not,
transportation. That's still not close.
And part of that has been that we've just consolidated our farms into largely in the Midwest, into huge industrial farms. And then, you know, kind of pushed farms out. So they can't be close to us. So that is where the Let Us Grow farm stand really helps, because you just, it's in your backyard. And now, like when your friend was saying it, was what your friend was saying, if the shit really hits the fan and we hit the apocalypse, yes, she might be a little bit more prepared in the beginning, because she can grow it in dirt, you know, but and we don't have electricity. But,
So but I know where my lettuce came from. I know that my lettuce was grown in as a seedling. If I didn't grow it myself, and if I didn't do the starter myself, right? The lettuce was grown in Marina Del Rey, which is 16 miles from my house. And then it was delivered via FedEx. And then it went into my farm stand, and it will sit there until it can't be harvested anymore. And so I know, like, for fact that you cannot get a more locally grown lettuce or vegetable than what you can do at your own home. And if you're starting them there yourselves, that is zero travel. You know,
and I know that that's one initiative that Let Us Grow is working on, is making more distribution sites so that they're closer and closer to people.
Well, and one of the things I loved about that report was that they said they're the largest distributed farm in the country, right? Or that's at least their goal. Like, it's not that they're the largest farm; it's that they're the largest distributed farm. That means everybody's farm is a part of the same system, a part of the same farm ecosystem, but they can be everywhere. And so if they have more warehouses locally, and you're getting your, you know, your seedlings from less of a distance, then that's only helping the, you know, their mission and ours and our earth, basically. I mean, hit me another question, because I know this is a long episode, guys. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Look, one thing, I wanted to go to the attitude versus actions, because I thought this was really important. It brought up another thing I remembered about that book. America's second most important factor when purchasing produce is that it is high in nutrients.
Yep.
70% still purchase most of their produce from grocery stores, even though it's lacking in nutrients by the time it hits the shelves. And one of the reasons, there's so many reasons for that. One is the soil. So if you haven't yet watched my favorite movie, Biggest Little Farm. Yeah. We have ruined our soil in this country, and that's one of the reasons that the nutrients in our our produce are so lacking. There's another, there's a walnut farmer in California here called Tenderly Rooted. He has sprouted walnuts, and his Instagram account is off the hook. I love it. You would love it. I just recently started following him. His stories are amazing. And he talks a lot about regenerative farming and all of these things and the nutrients in the soil. They talked about, though, on that Armchair Expert episode with Michael Moss. And I'm going to get this wrong. So listen to the episode and don't quote me on it. But I think it was something like 60%. There is an organization, and you'd have to listen to it. I can't remember what the organization is called, that has tracked the nutrients in food for the last, I want to say, 80 years.
Wow.
And he was saying they have tracked an orange, and I believe it was 60% less nutrients in that orange than there was when they started tracking oranges.
Jeez.
Yeah. So, and also because in big farming, they have to pick everything so early. So they're picking
and it's ripening on the truck.
Yeah. So when you can pick your thing when it's just fully ripe, that's when it's at the peak of its nutrients, and then eat it right away. That's the other part, because it starts to lose its nutrients when it leaves. So not only if you're getting it sent from, say, I don't know, Iowa to California, not only are they picking it early, so it already is starting with less nutrients because it's not to the peak of its ripeness, but then the second it comes off the vine, it's losing its nutrients and it's getting all the way to California. And then you have to get it from the store and bring it home and then wait a couple of days. I mean, we are like depleting our bodies. That's why the freaking supplement and vitamin
industry is absolutely right. They didn't have that 100 years ago. You know what I mean?
You didn't have to take vitamin. Well, I mean, no one lived like we did as long as we did, but still.
Yeah. But okay, so there's another thing in that section of the report that just blew my mind right open. And I don't know if it's one of the questions on the quiz. So if it is, we'll have to skip it. But the length of time that an apple can exist before it gets to your house threw me for a loop.
What is it?
They said that an apple can be 10 months old by the time it gets to your house.
Is that 10 insane?
Months.
Have you ever gone apple picking?
I think when I was a kid. I haven't taken the kids
so
yet.
So you go apple picking and you keep those apples in a dark spot in your house. They last for freaking ever.
Well, duh. I mean, if you
get it at your grocery store and put it on your counter, and if someone doesn't eat it tomorrow, it's done. You're done.
Yeah. And they're, you know. I just couldn't believe that. It was like, well, no wonder fruit rots so quickly, because you're getting it when it's so old already. And then it's been packaged and handled and traveled. And some of these fruits and vegetables are more well-traveled than I am. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
they've crossed more states. They've been through, they've seen more people. Like, come on. That was the one that got me. So what's the next question?
That's it. That's the last question.
Oh,
so cool. I'll just say there's so much good stuff in this report that we're not going to like read it for you, but it's just to kind of get you thinking today about just, I think we probably hit on more nutrition, but it all factors in to the environment. Yeah. And I think if you do anything for Earth Day, look at this. I'm sure it will still be up tomorrow. I assume that they'll probably put it on a highlight or something, but
I'm sure they will, because it, I mean, we got the direct link sent to us. So I'm not sure exactly where it lives online.
It's on, let me see. Cause it is on, they just published it today on Instagram as well.
Oh, good. It's a fascinating,
I'm assuming it's on their website. So it's called the American Food Journey Report, with in partnership with Let Us Grow and the Farm Project. They actually have the whole thing. I'm just realizing They have the whole thing. If you're on, so I'm sure it's on their website if you don't have Instagram, but on Instagram, they do have, and actually on their static feed, they posted a post with slides that has the whole thing right there on Instagram.
So amazing.
Yep.
Well, there you go. You have no excuse not to read it. And you know, that's just like the tip of the iceberg with why Let Us Grow makes sense for the earth and why, I mean, there was one, let me pull up this one fact really quickly. That was also fascinating. It's at the very end of the article, or of the report. Okay. Here, I'm going to read this portion of it. It's at the very end. Let Us Grow has created a community of connected growers who are effectively working towards building the world's largest distributed farm, which is what I said earlier. To date, the Let Us Grow farm stand has helped users collectively grow 1,156,000 fruits and veggies, recycled 1,098,000 ocean-bound plastic milk jugs, and saved, ding, 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 you ready for it? 23,123,000 gallons of water. Tell me that having a Let Us Grow farm stand in your house is not part of a greater cause to help protect and preserve our earth. We only have this one earth. We only have this one life. And, you know, our kids, like, do it for your kids, do it for the country, do it for the world. Like,
I mean, do it so that it's not April or May and you live in Colorado and it's still snowing.
Yeah. My brother-in-law.
It's not San Diego in 100 degrees all summer long. Like that. Yeah. It's crazy. And listen, climate change is not weather.
That doesn't need to be repeated.
But when I hear people complaining, people that I know don't give a crap about global warming, complaining about that it's snowing in May where they live.
I remind myself
that climate change is not solely weather, but it does affect weather.
It does affect weather. My brother and my sister-in-law live in Oklahoma. In Oklahoma, it's not supposed to snow in April. And they were in a snowstorm. I think they got 2 inches of snow yesterday in April. In Texas, Oklahoma.
Texas isn't supposed to have snow apocalypses ever.
I know.
Either. So let's get it together. Get it together, friends.
Yeah.
I love it because we're preaching to the choir a little bit, but.
And share it with your family. Share it with your kids. Like my kids, last story I'll give you for this episode, but on Sunday we went to the beach, as we do out here when it's beautiful. And, the wind was blowing. It was really gusty. And so we were leaving and my 8-year-old, saw that somebody had thrown trash on the floor or on the ground. And he was like, Mom, Dad, it can't get in the ocean. It can't get in the ocean. Can I please run after it? And he like just took off running and he grabbed all this trash. And I was like, okay, one, we have to disinfect you from head to toe now. But two, like he already has the mentality of like making sure that his earth is preserved for his grandchildren. We talk about this all the time. Like I talk to my in-laws about how their actions affect their grandchildren, but it's not just my kids. It's my kids' kids and their kids. Like how many generations are going to be left in this earth that have to like clean up our mess because we were too lazy to do something about it or too interested in being, you know, in ignoring the facts. And the facts are that we have to take better care of our environment and of ourselves. And, happy Earth Day.
Happy Earth Day.
So that's all I got.
That's all you got? That's all I got. Enjoy.
Have a great week, guys. We'll talk to you next week.